He's like, is that okay? And I'm like, I'm going to stop you right there.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are going to talk about the latest Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp. And as usual, we're spoiling the shit out of it, so tune out if you haven't seen it.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hey!
And Molly Glover.
Tis I, Molly Glover!
and we are here in beautiful Deepwood Mott, the lovely living room studios, to talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp, because it's another Marvel movie, and we pretty much talk about every Marvel movie.
Why wouldn't we? They're amazing.
They are amazing. So, Ant-Man and the Wasp, third movie this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought, before we go super in-depth, by the way, spoilers.
Oh, yeah. So many spoilers.
No doubt.
Not that most of it matters, except, like, the end credit scenes, but, yeah.
But still,
spoilers.
Yeah.
Spoilers. So, I thought it had a really different tone than the two movies that preceded it, I guess makes sense, given the tone of the first
Of the year.
Black Panther and Infinity War.
And I found that actually kind of refreshing, since Black Panther and Infinity War are pretty heavy. There's some heavy shit going down.
A lot of plot advancement for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, but I mean, even like Black Panther has some serious stuff to say about racial relations and you know, Killmonger's.
It's like his dad dies and it's sad.
But Black Panther has and Infinity War both have cultural importance. Different, very different kinds of cultural importance. But they have cultural importance, whether it's pop culture or other forms of culture. Ant-Man and the Wasp doesn't really have that.
Yeah, Ant-Man and the Wasp, I think the worst thing I can say about it is if Ant-Man and the Wasp didn't happen, it would have zero impact on the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
So far.
So it would appear.
Yeah,
The post credit sequence suggests to me that it will.
Right.
But anyway, Nick.
Yeah.
Since you may or may not get called out of this podcast.
Oh yeah, Nick's on call.
Yeah. So
yay.
This is full disclosure. We never lie about anything on this podcast, at least not intentionally.
Only our feelings.
So Nick, since you could get called away, I think we ought to give you the first chance to talk more in depth about your thoughts about Ant-Man and the Wasp.
So, the first Ant-Man movie was originally directed by Edgar Wright, and then it changed hands into the production. I think that you can tell this movie has no Edgar Wright in it whatsoever. I think that it's, like, bottom five Marvel movies. I enjoyed it. I had fun. It's not a bad movie. But a friend of the show, Bill Seitler, said Ant-Man and the Wasp is seven different movies and it can't decide which one it is. Or it's trying to be many different movies. And I kind of agree with that because the plot is kind of all over the place. It's kind of a jumbled mess. It has some funny parts, but some of the funny parts or some of the bits in the movie felt like, oh, we did this in the first one, so we got to do that in the second one.
Yeah.
And you can do that in ways like Deadpool 2 had some of that, but it felt like it was a new take. Some of that for Ant-Man and the Wasp felt a little stale to me.
I feel like a lot of the like, oh man, everything's so big when you're small, like, is just inherent in the Ant-Man franchise, but at the same time is also like, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, look how big that cup is. Oh, man, that's a big cup. Like,
having Bill Foster turn out to be the villain or a villain or accomplice to the villain was a little disappointing, and it felt like kind of a waste of the character. And I mean, to have one of the people of color be the villain.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's like, or their B squad assistant type comedy relief guys.
He's the villain's man in a chair.
Yes, yeah. He very much is, yeah, the villain's man in the chair. Yeah, the villain Ghost, who is way more interesting to me in the comics.
Yeah,
way more interesting in the comics.
I appreciated like the like, oh, what if like the guy who gets big and small all the time and is impossible to hit has to fight the person who can't be hit at all? Like that at least I liked the concept, but like in practice it just ended up being a whole lot of similar to watching Wonder Woman fight whatever that fucking god was in hers,
Ares.
or Superman fighting, you know, the Kryptonian.
Yeah,
where you're like, cool, they're both so tough.
I think I probably liked it a little more than the two of you. I, you know, to me, and it was partially because it was just kind of refreshing. It was more,
yeah,
more of a lighter Marvel movie. It was more about family, which, you know, I feel like, you know, Scott wanting
mm-hmm.
to be able to spend time with his daughter,
yeah,
and stuff like that. I think my biggest problem with Ghost, I've had this problem with a few other Marvel movies. I think the ones that are the weakest generally have this issue. What you don't have is the characters who are supposed to be whip smart, right?
Yeah.
Figuring out how to fight Ghost given her abilities.
Right.
You know, in the end, she gets taken out by Michelle Pfeiffer when her ship gets big.
Runaway,
yeah,
train.
Yeah.
It's
just like she just gets knocked over.
Yeah.
She gets Regina George.
And I felt like it would be good to have the character. I mean, that's what makes, I think, comic stories so compelling, or the ones that I find most interesting. It's one of the reasons that I was super into the early Spider-Man comics. In the
mm-hmm.
early Spider-Man comics, he would generally, in one comic, he'd get his ass kicked by the villain, and he'd have to figure out how to beat,
yeah,
the villain. And it,
yeah,
was always about more than just being Spider-Man. He had to come up... He had to be Peter Parker,
yeah,
as well as being Spider-Man. That was the thing that Marvel always did really well, I thought.
And sometimes beat the villain isn't beat up the villain. Sometimes beat the villain is, you know, help the villain or
outsmart the villain.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So Ghost in the comics is an anti-capitalist industrial saboteur,
oh,
who, like, you don't know his name, you don't know his origin story. At one point in one comics, he says he was, like, in IT or a programmer for some corporation in Marvel Comics. But,
okay,
like, I don't think we know his identity at all.
Okay.
And he hates Tony Stark because Tony Stark represents capitalism. And he's palled around with, like, Norman Osborn and stuff. I think he was a Thunderbolt for a while. And he's always kind of had his own thing going on, even when he was doing part of a team or something else. He always kind of had his own agenda.
Yeah.
But he's always had a bit of a grudge against Stark. And it's... Even though we know less about Ghost in the comics, I feel like he's a more compelling character. We know far more about Ghost in the movie, and she's an accident who's unstable, who's doing all this to save herself, when if they sat down and had one conversation, all of this would... None of this would have gone through.
Why didn't she just frickin' talk to Pym?
Why didn't Foster talk to Pym? I realize they hate each other, but there's a human life on the line.
Yeah, right. It really... That was a problem with that. When you've got Killmonger and then Thanos this year.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard to separate when everything's happening, you know, within just a few months of each other, and it's all part of this broader universe. It's hard to separate it all. And you go, all right, well, I don't feel like Ghost really did anything. And they tried to give her a backstory, and they tried to give her, make her a sympathetic character, but the problem is she's a sympathetic character who's willing to kill Scott's daughter,
right,
and basically has to tossed off the ledge as far as doing that.
Well, and the thing, like, Nick, you made a really good point when we were driving home from this movie. You mentioned Ghost's backstory. Nick's point was, you said We were just told everything in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We were Ghost's backstory. Like, every bit of interesting thing, every bit of, like plot, whatever, was told by someone to us about it. Michelle Pfeiffer told us what happened to her. We had the movie opens with Pym telling Hope, you know, the day that we left you and your mother died or whatever, or
yeah.
Your mother was lost, like that story. We've got the typical from the first one where Luis tells the
yeah.
story in the funny way where everyone's lip syncing to his words and everything.
Right.
And then, you know, everything has just been telling. And
so much exposition,
especially Ghost's backstory. I mean, it was like 45 seconds of just flashes real quick. And
yeah.
while I appreciated while the movie was happening, I want to make stress, I didn't hate this movie.
No,
I wasn't bored. I was always entertained. The movie moved along at a good clip. The pacing was good. Nothing felt like it went on too long. But generally it just felt like nothing. Like I felt like I ate cotton candy.
Well, yeah,
it
no
tasted
substance.
Great, but I was still hungry later,
yeah.
and I couldn't really remember
I said, if you don't include the post credit sequence, I don't
right.
feel like anything really happened in this movie that,
yeah.
that advances the Marvel Cinematic Universe in any really major way.
Cassie being interested in her dad's superhero stuff, Cassie being interested enough in his Pym particles and the world being shrunk down
wanting
that he built that
sidekick.
Whole wanting to be his sidekick, that's very exciting because she becomes Stature in the comics.
Yeah.
And she's a new Avenger? A young Avenger.
Avenger.
A young Avenger.
One of the original young Avengers
yeah.
who... So in the comics for quite a while, Scott Lang was dead and Scott Lang got brought back. But while Scott Lang was dead, Cassie became Stature.
He's like 15 at the
yeah.
time.
One of
yeah.
She becomes one of the Young Avengers because just being around her dad for so long, she soaked up enough Pym particles where she can just do this now.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, yeah. So that could happen and that would be great.
But then later in the comics, Scott Lang comes back and Cassie gets killed.
Yeah.
So they don't... Yeah, it's...
One thing about the movie that made me laugh out loud unintentionally, they did not intend this, was the science stuff.
Oh.
So if you watch it again, pay attention to the science things they say, because they'll say things like, the vectors are misaligned, or I can't get these quantum things to calm down.
There's something wrong with the algorithm.
Yeah, I have to change the algorithm. Or, you know, I measured the force, but I can't quite figure out the speed. It's just, they're using, it's very generic science words. And it's funny because, like, I appreciate that they aren't trying to make it hard sci-fi. They're not trying to, like, explain how any of it works. And they realize they have to do something sciency. So the writers did a very funny thing to me, which is just sort of throwing out science words like
yeah.
quantum or algorithm or, like, you know, like the measurements, or we have to realign our kajiggers. Like
yeah, the kajiggers are always a problem.
So quantum, there is something neat about that word in this movie, though. If you don't, do you mind if we talk about the end a little bit?
Well,
how
we should. I mean, we already said we were going to spoil it. So,
in an interview before Infinity War
Ooh.
Came out. So, it's important to note that Infinity War and Avengers 4 were shot at the same time.
Oh,
almost
Avengers 4 being...
The next Infinity War
oh,
Part
okay.
2, whatever
okay.
it's titled.
Cool.
So, those two movies were shot at the same time, mostly. While they were on press tour, Tom Holland and Benedict Cumberbatch, and poor fucking Tom Holland, always with the loose lips.
Because he's young. Because
he's an excitable young man.
Yeah.
Has said, when talking about the stuff in the movie, he says, oh, all the quantum realm, the quantum stuff, all the time travel and what's its and all that. And...
And Benedict Cumberbatch is like,
you can find a supercut of Benedict Cumberbatch
yeah.
being like, okay, come on, stop.
Well, before Ant-Man and the Wasp, it was meaningless.
Yeah.
But now,
yeah.
knowing that Scott is trapped in the quantum realm where there could be one quantum realm that connects many multiverse.
Oh.
And he's got some healing particles of some type.
And yep. He has this quantum power, energy stored up. And the quantum realm in the first movie, Hank Pym says, is outside of time and space.
Yeah.
Well, time and space are two of the fucking gems.
Ah. So
if Scott is outside time and space, there he might find a way back connected through the Infinity Gauntlet in some way, or through one of the stones in some way. I think that how he is gone at the end is significantly tied to Avengers 4.
That's really exciting. So at the post-credit scene, I thought that was the thing where I was finally like, all right, yeah, all right, this movie was worth it. If I had to sit through 2 hours of Ant-Man frivolity to get the power, dude, our theater was fucking silent.
I know.
So, you know, he goes in and it's like, hey guys, I'm ready to come back out, guys. And they pull back and it's just, and I wasn't even thinking. I wasn't like, oh, it'll be dust. I was like, oh, it's going to be, and then it was the dust. And I'm like, oh shit, both of them. Like, fuck.
All three of them.
Oh, it's three people, isn't it? Oh, yeah, it's Michelle Pfeiffer too.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All three of them.
Everyone but Scott.
Yeah. And so now I'm wondering about Cassie.
Oh.
Like, because if Cassie's still around, but like other adults aren't, she's shown herself to be very capable and cunning. And so I wonder if she could come into play. Also, the magical science thing that was just fucking ridiculous. Michelle Pfeiffer's magical healing hands.
Ah, yeah, the healing hands.
When it was like, what can we do? But Ghost, she's shifting. Ah! And Michelle Pfeiffer's like, I might try something. And I'm like, she's going to put her fucking hands on that kid's head. And sure enough, it was like, boom, bow. Like, just with the healing hands of quantum powers.
I love that in a place outside time where she's been trapped for 30 years, she aged, but didn't need to eat or drink. Like I feel like if it was one or the other, like if she was trapped in a quantum realm and didn't age,
sure,
that'd be one thing. Because then, maybe her metabolic function ceased in some way, but she was able to continue. But the fact that she had... fuck all quantum particles to eat and drink.
Yeah.
And then, but she aged the same. So clearly, with her knowledge as well, time passed for her there.
Right.
She's been living there. She looks like a quantum realm.
It's been 30 years to her.
Scavenger. Right. Yeah. So, that's interesting. Also, why the hell is it when anyone else goes to the quantum realm, they can't hack it and they start to go crazy and lose their shit. But she was able to survive that.
Wasn't there a point...
She's got magical girl powers.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe eventually you get over the madness and you acclimate.
Could be.
But
she went through childbirth, Nick. You know, she's seen some shit.
There's all sorts of hormones that just are there that dudes don't have.
Am I mistaking? So wasn't there a point... I could be wrong. Wasn't there a point where Scott went into the quantum realm and then came back and was like, wait, how long was I in there? And they were like, you've been in there like a day?
I don't recall.
Or something? Okay. Maybe
I did just rewatch Ant-Man. I don't remember.
No, I mean in this Ant-Man and the Wasp. I meant in this one. We've watched a lot of stuff in the meantime because he's been on call, so we've been home watching things in case he gets paged. But for some reason, I have this memory of him being like, wait, how long was I in there? And then being like, oh, it was this long. And him being like, shit, you know, like, you got to get me home because of my ankle bracelet. But I could be wrong.
Boy,
it seemed like the whether or not time passed or didn't felt very convenient.
Right.
When it needed to be.
The quantum realm is a realm of convenience, ultimately. What are the rules? Whatever we say they are, it's quantum. That means nothing.
What was the second post-credit sequence? Because I can't remember.
The drum set.
The ant and the drum set.
In the empty house.
That was
pretty
adorable.
Doing Scott's routine.
That's pretty adorable, though.
It was.
The ant is just going to do that forever until he dies. Like, that's just what the ant's going to do.
That's what...
Do you think their lifespan gets embiggened when they get embiggened? Because don't ants die after, like... I can't imagine they have a long lifespan.
Most insects don't have a lifespans measured in weeks, but
yeah,
I don't know.
What? So another talking about the stakes of the movie. There were, you were just saying, oh, you got to get home, my ankle bracelet and all that. There are several times in the movie where there's a deadline or a looming threat where, oh, crap, I got to get home because of house arrest,
They're coming to my house
which
now.
Which happens like two or three times. Mm-hmm. We need to get to these coordinates and make the place big so that he can come through with Janet. Like, all of these little deadlines that happen throughout the movie, none of them ever really matter.
Or at least they get done in a Ferris Bueller way that it's improbable.
Scott manages to sneak his way back into his house just in time before the FBI is there.
And the FBI doesn't see it even though they have his house surrounded.
And we don't see it either.
Yeah.
So essentially it's like Scott just teleports there and we assume he got there and got inside because he's a thief and he has shrink powers and all that jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, the once was like, all right, cool. He got back.
Yeah.
Ooh, what a close one. The aunt was there, and now it's him. His daughter covered for him. That was all sweet. But every subsequent time they did it, it was like, why are you doing this again?
Yeah. I felt the same way about the, and I lost it. Sorry, hang on. Talk about something else. Let's see if I can remember what I was going to say.
All right, so,
Baba Yaga.
We talked a lot about the
Baba Yaga. That was really funny.
Baba Yaga. Sorry.
We talked a lot about the things that we didn't like. What did you like?
The girl who plays Cassie is amazing.
All right.
Yeah.
I love her.
Yeah.
I also really love the positive family relationship that is his ex-wife and her husband and Cassie and him and how they were celebrating him getting out of house arrest. They'd clearly been coming over. Like, so that he could see Cassie, so he could see them. Like, two men have a good relationship that's not adversarial. It's not, I'm fucking her now, so deal with it. Like, it felt very cohesive, and we're all pulling for you, Scott, and it was good. It was good.
Every time I liked Agent Wu, the FBI agent. Funny enough, but
it's Randall Park.
Every time he did crash in, or at least a couple times, Scott's ex and her current were like, you just can't keep barging in here. Actually, they can.
Yeah.
You need a warrant.
No, they don't. Like, this is illegal. It's not, actually.
Both of them were on Scott's side, and both of them were in his corner.
He wasn't being a dick to her. He was just like, honey, no. Like,
they could have continued that adversarial relationship from the first movie, but they resolved it, and they know Scott's a good guy, and they know he wants to be a good father, and he know he wants to do his time.
And Cassie loves him.
Right.
Yeah.
So it would have been so boring for them to do that again, and I'm really glad that they didn't do that. I agree.
Oh, awesome. They portrayed Hank Pym accurately for me, because Hank Pym was a selfish piece of shit who kidnapped Scott out of his house arrest 2 or 3 days before he would have been fine, because he needed something.
Yeah.
Because it's been 30 years since Janet's been lost in the goddamn whatever fuckosphere, and all of a sudden it can't wait 3 days for Scott to be legally free and clear.
It can't wait.
Well, sure, but he didn't know that. He couldn't have just been like, maybe we just let Scott wait, you know, or something. Nope, he has to fuck up Scott's whole life again, not even caring. Not even caring if maybe it makes it so Scott goes to prison and can never see his daughter, not caring about Scott's daughter, and how Scott's daughter might not have a father ever again.
The ego stuff between him and Bill Foster.
Yep.
Like,
it was very on brand for Hank Pym, from what I know and hate love in the comics.
Imperfect. Very much imperfect Hank Pym.
If he'd just been hitting Janet, that's the only way it would have been even more accurate.
I really liked when Ghost has them all hostage, and Bill Foster is revealed how he gets into the emergency call from Cassie, and he's like, they're like, what, who's calling? Why is your phone ringing? He's like, it's my daughter. Like, they hang it up, and then
she's just gonna call
FaceTimes
back. She's
with
gonna
an emergency.
Freak out, like,
so they face. He's like, it's an emergency. I've got to help my daughter.
Yeah.
Where are my soccer shoes?
I know,
just
Daddy.
Like there's this moment of tension, and it's
and
just
then his
like,
ex-wife too. No, for real though, where are those shoes? We're here.
We'll just swing by.
We're here for them.
That was a nice moment. I liked the fact that we see some aftermath of Civil War, that you know, Scott is home, but he's under house arrest because of the Civil War.
Yep.
Yeah,
the results of the Civil War.
Yep.
So
Wu breaks that down too. He reads the whole. He recites the whole Sokovia Accord.
Yep, and even though it's more exposition, that was a part I didn't hate.
Right.
In terms of telling and not showing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, and some of it is like ghost backstory you could have shown. And it would have been better if you'd shown than just told the story. But
a quick sidebar. I feel like the director / writers of this movie misunderstood what it means when people say show, don't tell. And what they thought was, no, hold on. If we show it in a montage and someone's talking about it, we're showing it. It's not just someone telling you in verbal exposition. We're literally showing it to them. It's like, no, honey, no, that's still telling. you misunderstood your semiotics class.
So we got to get on to five questions.
Yeah.
Five questions.
Are there any final things that you want to say about the movie before we do?
So the size-changing hijinks are always, like, super funny and neat. but I feel like the biggest villain in the movie, or the biggest threat to Scott, at least, was his suit was unpredictable and would conveniently shape him large or small. And that was the reoccurring obstacle throughout the movie, is his prototype suit. And it was used to great comedic effect. It wasn't always bad, but the fact that the biggest, like, a bigger hazard than Ghost was Scott's suit didn't work right.
His malfunction.
And when it didn't work right was kind of entirely up to the writer's convenience. And the school scene with him being small was super funny and cute, but, like, overall I thought it was kind of a lazy thing to do. But on the other hand, like, what are you going to do? He's fucking Ant-Man. He can change super small, super big. Like, there's nothing that's ever going to represent an obstacle to him with that power set. So you need to be creative about what you put him up against.
Well, except, and I mean, here's the thing, and the reason that I didn't feel that they used Ghost, that we talked about Ghost not being used to great effect. Ghost is somebody that is not vulnerable to his power set. And that's that was the big miss that they had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right, five questions?
Five questions.
All right, we have five answers from Ray. She says, it's Ray, your friendly neighborhood future interpreter, who is super awkward.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Let's go.
Thank you for being awkward. All right, question number one. What is your favorite or most compelling conspiracy theory?
The moon is fake. Not the moon landing. The whole moon. As happens when I meet people like this, I have no words.
Yeah.
The whole moon is fake.
The whole moon is fake. Well,
yeah.
Actually, if you're a flat earther, you have to believe that.
Yeah.
I
mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Question number two. What is your perfect 2-week vacation?
This one is hard because there are three aspects I would have to think of. Is it just me, or my partner and I, or my partner, my son and I, all three are different. Just me. I would go somewhere completely different than here in Minnesota. Something like India, Nepal, some small farm town in China off in the middle of nowhere, where I would pay a guide and just learn everything I could about a culture completely different from mine for 2 weeks. If it was just my partner and I, we would go someplace like Scotland on a Scotch drinking tour, or New Zealand, and spend a week north and a week south. He and I would go somewhere very pretty with sheep. I don't know why sheep is important, but it is. Listen, I'm going to interrupt, Ray. Sheep are very important, and I don't understand how you don't know why.
I was going to say, if you're answering this podcast,
you
don't understand why sheep are important,
they're fluffy, and they go bleh. All right. All three of us, we would either go back to Hawaii. My 10-year-old son is obsessed with Hawaii. He and I have gone before to visit friends, and this time I would let him do all the things he didn't get to do. Although laying out, falling asleep on the beach, watching the Perseid meteor shower is hard to beat.
Hmm.
More likely, I would wait for his 11th birthday, which is this January, and surprise him with a trip to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter and have a Harry Potter-themed 2 weeks somewhere warm.
You know, that's awesome, but I've been there, and it would not last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But anyway, a good 3 days.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Anyway, Question number three. What's a movie or book that changed your life and how or why?
Cutthroat Island.
Yeah,
now hear me out. Hear me out.
And it's a crappy movie.
But. It's bad, but it's so bad. But as a young girl, seeing a badass woman acting like a badass woman with not even hinting that she would ever think of apologizing for it. Not a woman acting like a man, but a person who is female acting like a pirate. Yes, I still love every awful moment of that horrible movie.
Yeah, I don't blame her for that.
That's legit.
There are not a lot of pirate movie women-led pirate films. It's too bad that the really only one is so god-awful.
I was obsessed with Rinka the Robber's Daughter as a child, and it's for very similar reasons. I wrote a lot of fiction where there were tons of dead bodies stacked like cordwood, you know, at the hands of my female protagonists. So, yeah.
Question number four. What's the geekiest thing you've ever done or said?
I wrote into Geeks Without God twice. I'm claiming the deeds of another mom, bragging, but I raised my son. I named my son Odin. He is a third-generation D&D player who read all of Harry Potter in 2 months with a Hobbit break in the middle. He won't travel without his plush Bilbo Baggins. He knows every word to every Star Wars movie and cartoon. He gets more excited about scientists and writers than actors and musicians and writes short stories about him and his barbecue ribs-eating dragon companion, not pet dragon, thank you very much, going on urban fantasy adventures through the Twin Cities. Yeah. I raised that, and I know I would be proud of him no matter what, blah, 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 required mom love crap, but there is something about geek syncing with my kid that just fills me with nerdy pride.
Yeah.
Also, with my pre-screening, he has started to listen to some Geeks Without God segments, and he has come to love you as I have.
Uh-oh.
He has come into atheism as only a high-functioning autistic kid can.
Yeah!
At full speed, head-on, with no prisoners.
Tell him to answer our five questions.
Yeah, tell him to send in his answers.
Except
yeah.
this one, because he probably shouldn't know an answer to this
his
one.
His sugar hangover cure.
What's your number five, what's your favorite hangover cure?
I don't get hangovers. I never have, and now even in my 30s, I still don't. I drink lots of water, and since I like food I eat, I don't really drink more than one drink unless I can sleep in. So food, water, and shade, I might be a ficus. Thank you guys for doing what you do. I can't wait to see you at Convergence, Ray. Ray, thank you so much. It took us a long time to get to your answers, but we got there. Thank you.
Yeah, and it was good to see you at Convergence.
Yes, I'm sure Ray was there.
Yes.
I'm sure it was great.
So... All right. Well, that's all five questions. That's Ant-Man and the Wasp. If you listen after the credits, as there always is on Geeks Without God, there is a credit cookie. So, we want to just remind you, hey, we got this Patreon thing. Feel free to support us with a couple of bucks. You can listen to these episodes early or not. Lots of people don't. But they just support us because money is helpful. And it helped us buy... great new sound equipment that we're not using today because
we're not
in the basement.
We're not in the basement studios. We're here at Deepwood Mott.
But nonetheless, on more than half of our episodes, it has made a huge difference in sound quality, and that's thanks to our Patreon supporters. I'm just going to stop talking now. We will catch you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
The real unanswered question in the entire movie is, how could Scott afford that nice a place in San Francisco?
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. Authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
I got done with work at 5 and I got paged at 5:15.